Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Dance studios to present end-of-season recitals. A couple of dance recitals will take place at Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center over the next few weeks. On May 23rd through 24th, Tammy Locklear's dance studio will celebrate its 30th anniversary with a performance called Dancing Through Time. The first performance will be at 7 p.m. May 23rd, and the second will be at 7 p.m. May 24th. Quote, "We are celebrating our 30th anniversary this year," end quote, owner Tammy Locklear said. Quote, "It's a big deal for us. Our theme is Dancing Through Time, and we're celebrating the last 30 years. We got some of our alumni that's coming back to dance this year. We're doing a lot of special things," end quote. Locklear's studio has about 250 students. The range of students' age is from 2.5 to adult. Local dancers will be performing tap, ballet, jazz, and hip-hop dances that they've been practicing this year. Quote, "It's going good," end quote, Locklear said. Quote, "We just have the typical craziness before a show. We've had recital practices in the last couple of weeks. We're just trying to get all the kids to know where their dances are, that sort of thing. It's been fun, though," end quote. For Locklear and her dance studio, being in business for 30 years has meant a lot. Quote, "I'm just super excited," end quote, Locklear said. Quote, "We didn't expect to be doing this for that long. I'm super excited to be able to celebrate this with all our students and alums. When you start your career at such a young age, you just never know where life will take you. It's been fun. I love watching the kids grow up. We're a family here. That's one thing that's a huge connection for all of us. All the teachers love the kids. It's a big family and a testimony to see the alumni come back and be in our show. Not everyone is able to come back, but a lot of them do. That's super exciting for us. We have kids now that are second generation here at the studio, which is so awesome. I have parents that I taught that are bringing their kids here, and that's been so fun to watch," end quote. Tickets for the show can be found at tinyurl.com/2A93UR6H. Quote, "This is our last hurrah for our season," end quote, Locklear said. Quote, "We'll start our summer session in June," end quote. For its final performance of the season, Dance Connection will be going back in time with a 1920s theme. The performance, titled The Great Dance Recital, will take place at 7 p.m. May 29th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Quote, "We have over 105 students that will be there," end quote, owner Kim Ronquillo said. Quote, "Our theme is going to be the 1920s, so we have a jazz ballet and all different styles of dancing. We'll be showcasing what the girls have been learning over the past season," end quote. Ronquillo says this will be the first performance since before the pandemic. Quote, "It's exciting," end quote, Ronquillo said. Quote, "To be able to see the kids doing what they love to do and being able to do what I love to do is a good feeling. I'm excited to see them on stage," end quote. The students at Dance Connection range from 3 to 18. Quote, "We usually do 2 shows a year," end quote, Ronquillo said. Quote, "We have opened up since COVID. This is the first year that we have opened up since COVID. It's our first one. We usually do 2, but this year we did 1, end quote. Since it's the first show since the pandemic, Ronquillo says there have been a few challenges in getting ready. Quote, "For this particular show, it's just been about getting everyone back into their comfort zones," end quote, Ronquillo said. Quote, "We're trying to get the students out of their zone of being cooped up at home and be social. We're trying to get them to be confident again. I think the students are doing pretty well," end quote. Dance Connection currently has 105 students. This performance will also be the last before Dance Connection merges with the dance company. Ronquillo says that process of merging has just started and should be completed before the fall. Quote, "I've been doing this for 6 years by myself," end quote, Ronquillo said. Quote, "We want a place where everyone in the community can train in one place. I had some of my dancers train at his place just for hip-hop and tumbling, which I didn't offer at my place, and vice versa. We just figured to do it together," end quote. Tickets for the performance can be found at tinyurl.com/2P9VT6XR.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa America, Fishing for the Bottom by Dennis Elam. Apple has been displaced as the most valuable company in the world. It is now Saudi Arabia's Aramco. What a difference a few months make. Here is the box score on major indices declines since their November through January highs. The DJIA down 14.8%. SPX down 18.75%. NASD down 32%. The tech-heavy NASD led the way up, soaring to 16,750. The decline erases the entire advance from November 2020 to the high a year later. A one-third loss in 6 months is certainly heralding the bear market we have been discussing. There are precedents for what is happening. From the NASD high of 5,000 in March 2000, the index fell to 3,000 in just 3 months. It rebounded 61% of the fall to 4,250 and then spent over 2 years sinking to 1,250. That erased 75% of the high. The 1929 experience was similar. A big drop occurred from the October high of 390 based on the DJIA to 198 by November 13, 1929. A rebound carried to 294.07 by April of 1930. It then began a slow collapse into July 8, 1932 at a mere 41.22. The decline in the industrials took out the February lows this year. That suggests we have seen the final highs in most indices. A rebound as in 2000 and 1930 should take us into the fall of 2022. The markets are quite oversold. The percent of NASD stocks over their 50-day moving averages has plunged to 7.9%. So 92% are below that measure. The same is true now. I count 10 columns of new lows. This week, there were 27 new highs and over 2,700 new lows. That is a factor of 100 times to 1. Wow. Bear markets wipe out the excesses of the previous bull market. That is starting in the murky cryptocurrency markets. Losses run to the billions, yet El Salvador continues to cling to Bitcoin as its legal tender. Speaking of which, we now learn the U.S. government is distributing drug gear, including crack pipes. $18 million worth of meth was just seized at the border. The administration reaction is to lift Article 42, which will increase border crossings. The latest response to record high in all things energy is to halt offshore lease sales in Alaska, drawing criticism from that industry. Bull markets float higher on the positive mood. Negative mood is on the rise. For the first time in U.S. history, the Supreme Court is surrounded by a fence. Shoplifting is apparently legal in California. Monstrous is the latest horror movie release. The Ukraine war began at the lowest point of the Russian stock market since 2008. Use the upcoming rally to lighten up your holdings. It may be the last opportunity for some time. This is Jane reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, May 14th, from The Economist. Double whammy. Things are tough for anyone trying to purchase a house, with a double whammy of rising prices and increasing interest rates. Inventories are very low, and supply chain issues and labor shortages continue to complicate construction. The past couple of years have seen median sales prices of existing homes jump by close to $100,000 in many Texas markets. Costs of existing homes had been rising fairly steadily for almost a decade before the pandemic. As COVID-19 increased remote work options and the need for additional space in homes for work and school, many people started looking to buy. Stimulus packages increased available cash, further fueling demand, while monetary policy moves to stabilize the economy pushed interest rates to historic lows. The result was a steep increase in housing prices as demand far outstripped supply. Over the past few months, typical mortgage rates have jumped from less than 3% to well over 5%, quite modest by historical standards, but substantially above recent experience. Although the Federal Reserve doesn't directly control mortgage rates, tightening policy by reducing security purchases and raising the federal funds rate target generally signals other rates to rise. There is little doubt that Fed action is necessitated by inflation, but it also assures that borrowers will face higher costs. although there are many factors involved in individual loans, the change in mortgage rates is clearly affecting Texas home buyers. For every percentage point the interest rate rises, monthly payments jump about $60 per $100,000 in loan value on a 30-year note. In the Austin area, for example, where the median sales price in March was over $520,000, the 2 percentage point increase we've seen since the beginning of the year means well over $500 per month added to the payment, with 10% down on a 30-year note. Among the hardest hit groups are first-time buyers and those looking in lower price ranges. When prices for everything from food to gasoline are also rising, higher costs for housing rates are even more difficult for many to navigate. Housing values further to translate incremental property taxes and insurance costs, which affect even those who aren't currently buying. Rents have increased sharply as well. Construction challenges and price increases for essential inputs will keep new homes pricey and discourage building lower-cost residences, which typically provide smaller profit margins. Interest rates will likely continue to rise as the Fed battles inflation and there are notable near-term headwinds. There are early signs that the market may be calming down to some degree as people give up or are priced out of the market, but unfortunately, it's unclear that relief is coming anytime soon. Stay safe. This is Jane reading from the Saturday Odessa American Letters to the Editor. Ruiz Crutcher is a good choice. With deep roots in Ector County, I am known to be a passionate supporter of the principles of constitutional and fiscal conservatism, and someone that recognizes character, integrity, and hard work. In that, I am a strong support of Lori Ruiz Crutcher for judge of the 244th Judicial District Court. She understands the responsibility, power, and influence of this position and will work selflessly with humility and understanding that with great power comes great responsibility. She will do what is right, being fair, impartial, and absolutely professional without any fluff or distraction, always. Join me in voting for Lori Ruiz Crutcher. Election day is Tuesday, May 24th, with early voting starting Monday. From Mark Darville in Odessa. People don't read enough anymore. Well, I think that the Odessa American has shot itself in the foot this time. I'm referring to their recent decision to go primarily digital online and only deliver an actual paper on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And now it's going to be mailed, which means that it will no longer be a morning newspaper in a lot of cases, since the mail does not run until sometimes as late as 5 or 6 p.m. That won't be news, it'll be history. I'm assuming that this is a cost-cutting measure since newspaper circulation is down almost nationwide. And I believe this is caused by more and more people not reading anymore. Most people are more concerned with watching sports on TV or streaming movies than they are in current events and knowing what is going on in the world. This is the very reason that socialists, liberals, and secular humanists are becoming successful in converting America into a socialist, anti-Christian country. Also, complicating the problem, or making it easier for the socialist, is the fact that way too many people nowadays have graduated from dumbed-down schools and literally can't read. High schools now are graduating semi-literate and functionally illiterate students who are incapable of independent thinking. All they know about the country and the world is what they get from 30-second sound bites on the internet and what they get from the social media pages, which, as we all know, are factually accurate and true. After all, you can't put anything on the internet that isn't true. I absolutely hate this decision to downsize circulation. I like to read the paper in the mornings while I eat my breakfast, and I like to have a physical paper to hold. I love to read, but I want real books and newspapers. I will not read an ebook, Kindle, etc. I am fairly computer savvy, but I have absolutely no interest in reading a computer screen while I eat. I don't have a computer in my kitchen anyway. I sincerely believe this decision will come back to bite the OA in the butt in the future. From Sandy Milner. Bonds were needed for ECISD. Ector County recently had on the ballot two propositions to build a brand new high school, a tech school, and fund the cost of repairs and make modern updates to the old and outdated buildings. All of that is most likely needed. These are my opinions why they failed. To be clear, I voted yes on both, but not for the reasons you may suspect. Number one, 2 years ago, the school board voted to buy 100 acres in northeast Ector County. This location, we were told, is where the new high school would be built. Yes, the population growth has been in that area, but West Odessa has existed for years, so it was predetermined 2 years ago. I would recall that school Permian East. 2 years ago, it was not thought that West Ector County needed a high school. Prior to Election Day, ads were being shown that West Odessa needed a high school next. So another bond for $187 million would be 3 years after Permian East was built. Why not now? Maybe voters did ask. Number two, west of Farm Market Road 1936, there are four elementary schools. Where do these kids later go in middle school? And how do they get there? West Odessa is in Ector County ISD. For 3 years, there has been an east side versus southwest side. Where is Raffles Stadium? Remember why it could not be built on I-20? Number four, saying the tax increase for a $100,000 house is $12 per month. We can do the math, but who lives in a $100,000 house? So every $100,000 increase goes up $144, $288, $432, $622. It was a lead on. Number five, just a few years ago, ECISD asked for another bond to get ninth graders on the high school campus, so money was spent to enlarge both Permian High School and Odessa High School. That bond has not been paid off. So with the addition of ninth graders, the campuses are overcrowded, a problem by our own design. Number six, the bond had their supporters and individuals giving their name and support. I call that the A-list. Good people, very good people. I know their names and what they do for Odessa. How many of them live in West Odessa? When the vote goes 60-40, we are not listening to the 60. Number seven, ECISD has a teacher shortage. Where are all the new teachers coming from, and where are they going to live? Number eight, 6A is only for football. As a fan and former player, the talent would be divided among three schools? From Terry Lang, Ector County Justice of the Peace, Precinct 1. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for May 14th. Crimes against children up in Ector County. The number of children being abused in Ector County is increasing, and not just because there was a dip due to COVID, said Carrie Brona, Executive Director of Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center. The Texas Department of Family and Protective Services indicate the number of abuse cases investigated by Children Protective Services in Ector County dropped 10% from 2019 to 2020, but surged nearly 18% between 2020 and 2021. In looking at the difference between 2019, which was a typical year, and 2021, there was a 5% increase. The number of cases are actually even higher, Brona said. CPS doesn't track law enforcement investigations involving non-family members. Perona said the number of children reporting sexual abuse cases accounts for anywhere from 45% to 65% of the cases reported monthly. The remaining cases involve physical abuse or neglect. While child advocates expected to see a post-COVID surge once schools open back up and teachers began making reports again, Brona said, she believes the numbers are rising for other reasons as well. Social media has played a huge role, like the Me Too movement and the sexual assaults that happened with all the gymnasts. That really has opened up the world to it's not acceptable any longer, and I think it's helped. We have also started Child Safety Matters in all the schools. In 2019, Harmony Home employees began visiting students in K through 5th grade to teach them about body safety. Just under 2,400 kids received the training in 2019, but that number shot up to more than 16,000 last year. About a month ago, a little girl who spent time in the program went to school officials and told them that as a result of the program, she realized what her father was doing to her was not okay. The father was arrested, and she's now receiving therapy services with us. It starts with that education piece, and you can see that full 360. So hopefully that girl is in elementary now. When she hits adolescence, she's going to have the tools in her box that she's going to be able to cope as she develops into a young lady and know that it's not her fault and that's what this is all about, said Brona. She believes the number of children and families reporting abuse is on the rise because of the efforts of the Ector County District Attorney's Office. I think it also ties back to the convictions. When people are seeing that alleged perpetrators are being found guilty and they're getting sentenced or they're having a significant consequence to their action, it allows the community to understand that there's no tolerance for that kind of behavior. It sets like a standard, you know. In my opinion, if you're going to do this, you need to be aware that there are some major consequences. It's not going to be a slap on the hand, and I feel like that has had increased and had been a good thing. Unfortunately, the number of cases being reported doesn't truly reflect the number of children being abused, Brona said. She estimates roughly 15 to 20% of parents either don't believe their children or fail to report the abuse for a variety of reasons. Parents often fear the financial implications of an arrest, are reluctant to turn in a family member, or simply would rather address the issue inside the home. 30% of children are abused in the home, and another 60% are abused by someone else they know, Brona said. Families often don't realize that Harmony Home can help them obtain social services and will provide counseling, she said. We work with these families to help them with referrals, crime victims compensation, all of the information that they need so that hopefully they can focus on the most important thing, their family becoming whole again. Not all the time does that work. I would love to say in this world that we live in, everybody becomes healed, but it's just not the world we live in, unfortunately. It saddens her that so many single parents feel compelled to invite a new boyfriend or girlfriend into their homes, whether it's for financial or any other reason, because it often doesn't occur to them the risk they are taking with their children. We had a case like that not too long ago, that gentleman who got 6 life sentences. Mom had moved into the community to have a better relationship with her parents. She was a single mom, couldn't afford daycare. A family friend was watching her. So like you know, just in reading that and understanding the concept, did the community fail her? Did the community fail that little girl? Yes. So it's one of those questions that keeps me up at night. Harmony Home is doing its best to educate people on the dangers. Since 2012, Harmony Home has been offering a 2-hour training called Darkness to Light. A trained facilitator teaches groups how to prevent, recognize, and report child sexual abuse. So far, more than 7,000 adults have gone through the program. Naturally, the Ector County District Attorney's Office is seeing a commensurate number of cases being presented to their offices for possible prosecution. However, First Assistant District Attorney Greg Barber said sexual abuse cases are amongst the hardest to prosecute for a number of reasons. Many children don't report the incident until years after all traces of physical evidence have disappeared because they were too young, or they didn't realize they were being abused, or they were being pressured by their families not to report abuse because of finances or familial ties to the perpetrators. Getting DNA evidence from something that happened 5 years ago is probably not going to happen. If you have a girl 14 years old who says, 5 years ago, my neighbor did this, try to get people to remember where and what they were doing 5 years ago. If that suspect started saying, I was in college, I wasn't even around then, are we able to verify that? Do they have some documentation of it? The burden is on us. Are we able to put that person in proximity to our victim during that time frame? Prosecuting relatively fresh cases can also be problematic. It can be difficult when you're talking to a 4 or 5-year-old. How do they look at time? You have to look at it through their eyes. Do they say it was the end of December around Christmas, or do they just remember that it was cold out and they were at their uncle's house? You have to try and find some corroboration if there's not a physical injury that's indicative of sexual assault. You have to obviously research, how can I corroborate this? Are there other witnesses or other victims out there? Investigators oftentimes have problems locating those witnesses too, Barber said. Sexual assault nurse examiners, neighbors, teachers, and other potential witnesses move over time, especially in an oil-filled time. Even when prosecutors think they might have a chance to get a guilty verdict, they often have another obstacle to overcome. The biggest problem is you have parents in some cases that do not want their children or that child to testify. They do not want them re-traumatized. A lot of times they want you to go forward with the case, but they do not want their child to have to testify sometimes. And in a very, very large percentage of them, the child would have to testify to get the evidence you needed for conviction, Barber said. So what happens is you have to weigh the victim's and parent's wishes with the ability to succeed at trial, and sometimes in between, you're looking for what's an acceptable justice among the parties. In other words, that's when prosecutors start to think about offering plea agreement. But even then, there can be issues. If a defendant doesn't have a criminal history and they're looking at 25, 50, 75 years in prison, they have no incentive to enter a plea agreement. A lot of times they're like, you're giving me pretty much a life sentence anyway, so I will take my chances at trial, Barber said. As a result, there's often a backlog of cases waiting to go to trial, he said. This is Jane, reading for the Saturday, May 14th, Odessa American. Ector County Independent School District awards Ramirez as Nutrition Employee of the Year. With a signature smile on her face, Lucia Ramirez was awarded with the School Nutrition Employee of the Year at Permian High School on Friday. She was surprised with a placard, an award, and a check from the Education Foundation to mark the occasion. Officials from Permian High School and across the district, including Superintendent Scott Murray, gathered around her. The district did the same at campuses around the district Friday and awarded others May 6th at another group of schools. Former Director of School Nutrition and now Executive Director of Operations, Brandon Reyes, said Ramirez is very deserving of this recognition. She puts out a ton of effort every day and her smile is contagious. She remains positive even amidst all the craziness, he said. Ramirez has said she has been at Permian for 11 years. This has made me so happy. I love my job and I try to do the best every day, she added. Ramirez said she likes to work in the schools because she tries to help students and every day is different. A mother of three, she added that she tries to treat students like one of her own children. I love to cook, she said. She added that she tastes everything to make sure it's okay. The students seem to like pizza and chicken nuggets best. Juan Pondo, director of school nutrition services, said she thinks it's great that Ramirez received the laurel. She's a reliable employee that we can always count on to come to work every day. She prepares over 1,000 meals a day, which is not an easy job, but she does it with a smile on her face and such a positive attitude. Pondo added that Ramirez's attitude is infectious and prompts others to push up their production. Nancy Cook, a school nutrition supervisor and formerly PHS school nutrition manager, nominated Ramirez for the award, and Pondo chose her out of four nominees. She's amazing, totally amazing, Cook said. Janet Bell, also a supervisor, was also at Permian High School. She said Ramirez has undergone immense hardships this year, but still came to work with a smile on her face. She laughs at everything. She's a happy person, even through all of it, Cook said. In addition to her work at Permian High School, she also dances in a ballet.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.